I'm really interested in why you're here and what it is you want from this. So maybe we can just introduce ourselves, or can introduce yourselves very rapidly and say what you hope will come from this, because in an hour and a half of the time that we're here, we need to have a little sense to what you're wanting, why you've come. Who are you?
I'm Lucy Birdie. I'm here because my writing has been known as black writing. And I don't know what the emphasized black writing means, but I guess it means the English language. And evidently it's not bourgeoisie writing. It's black writing.
I'm Madeline Davis, and I'm taping. But besides that, I'm a member of the Buffalo Women's Oral History Project. And one of the areas that we have been working through on our history of the lesbian community has been the black lesbian community and its separateness and its integration in the white community. We wanted to know better how to handle our material, how to acquire our material, how to do it justice.
I'm Helen Christian. I'm a reader. Helen Christian. I'm a reader, not a writer. I'm interested in people, and the more I read, the more people speak, the more I learn.
I'm Susan Jordan, and I'm here partly from the New Women's Times.
I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I'm Susan Jordan, and I'm here partly from the New Women's Times in Rochester. I guess I'm in this particular workshop just because I want to hear what people had to say.
I'm Wilma Campbell, and I'm in Rochester also. I'm here because I'm feeling isolated as a black woman, and I'm just doing some writing as myself, and I want to make contact with other black women who are writing and meeting black women.
I'm Donna Kangetter, and I'm a graduate student at Canadian Studies, and I'm real interested in your writing and this bridge, and I'm interested in hearing about how to get across language issues between black women and white women.
I'm Holly Goldman, and I'm a reader, and I'm here to hear people who write talk. I have a sort of a connection to Barbara, and
we're in law.
Yes, we're in law. And when I heard Audrey speak last night, she said some things that made me think, and I wanted to hear the same thing.
I'm Jill Lawson. And I'm here because my cousin is
My name is Leonard Walker, and I'm here mainly out of curiosity, but now to become a little bit more enlightened as to women and what they feel and what they think about when they write, and how to find out more about.
All right. My name is Joan Mitchell. I went to the reading last night, and Miss Lori invited me to come to this workshop today. I knew about it, but I hadn't planned to come. I'm kind of a closet writer. I write my stuff and hide it. And I thought, well, this would be a really unique opportunity for me to find myself, see if I really want to bring my writing out of the
closet. Yeah. I'm Michael F. Hopkins. I'm a poet and journalist, among other things. And personally, I found some of the most powerful writing has been coming out in terms of poetry of third world writers, especially the third world woman writers. And it's just an opportunity to come and check it out personally.
Do you want to say that again?
We need to hear it.
I'm Kate Schwade, and I'm here because, at least for the last 2 weeks, I have been living and breathing this event, as well as having been in a study group that this bridge was the basis of the discussion for white women dealing with our own racism. And I particularly wanted to hear in a workshop some of the contributors in that book, in personal contact, and I'm a sporadic closet writer.
Before I go, maybe Chris and I would like to start knowing them. Look at the table. I'm Chris Beats, and I'm another one of these people who are in the study group that Kate was talking about. Oh, we're in the same study group.
The name?
Chris. And I think a lot of the things he said were true. And he was very impressed by some of the audience, some of your readers. I'm Marilyn Bell, and I was also part of that study group. And I find that the more I read, the more I learn, the more I know I don't know enough. And there's a lot more I do need to learn. I also speak, and I deal with a lot of Washington Spanish students, and most people when tell me in form how much I don't know.
And they always separated out the kids who write a lot and read a lot. and make us feel that you don't fit in a black world or a white world, that you're this person who's special but not necessarily part of it.
My name is Barbara Smith, and I'm really excited to be here for a number of reasons. You know, one being, you know, reunion. And, you know, I'm just very excited about writing. You know, I think I get more so as time goes on. I'm a reader also, very committed. I like what people are saying about the special situation, you know, of women writers, which I think probably extends to other women of color, you know, as well, you know, that, you know, to be a writer means somehow that you're not a part of the culture or your race, when language and literature is prevented, you know, to you. And like, this has been a real struggle, you know, in my own life to figure out how I can make all the, you know, the commitments and passions, you know, fit together. So I think it will really give us some good stuff.
I'm Audre Lorde, and I've been writing a long time, and it's something that the process has constantly undergoes change, as I do in my life. And here today, I guess in particular, I'm really interested in some of the obstacles to black women writers, some of the obstacles to women of color who attempt to express and to share to writing the things that I think are absolutely essential to our survival. Because I do believe that writing is that it's one of the ways in which we cobble the present, or that we really attack the past, the present, and the future in some way that we can use. And I thought we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but that there are very powerful and real obstacles for us, and they continue in different guises over and over again. And most of them are the ways in which we are encouraged to invalidate ourselves, to believe that this doesn't matter what we have to say. As you say, right as soon as we come to the citizen, we were separated off. They told us this is either not black or that this is extraneous to our living. And it's so important, I think, to hold on to the fact that this is true, that our words, that our feeling, that our writing, that our creativity is not trivial, it's not beside the point. It is part of the way in which we struggle, it's part of our survival, and really living. So I guess I really want to talk about the obstacles to that kind of consciousness, the obstacles to our creativity, to mind, and the ways in which race, as Patty said, is race, class, as sexuality, are all used against us, and sometimes in ways we don't even, aren't even aware of, to create distance.
You have been very familiar with kind of realist thing, but I mean, you're going to get, you know, funding. So, this is what I'm
saying. Oh, I'm sorry. That's
fine. Because you didn't hear everything else. Why did you do it on the spot? Everybody else built on it, I think.
That's you say it in the
past. So, you want to. We were talking about the obstacles that we get experienced in trying to write, and we still experience, and then I guess just give us some more things.
Well, I've listed obstacles, and I was thinking about this, and there are those very real obstacles. When I say real, they're all real, but the material in terms of the lack of time and how there is so much that we need to do. There's so much work to be done. And it is always easier to let those things go that feel as if they're most central. And I know for me, my writing always feels as if it comes out of the core. And that's something else too that I always identify for myself as a piece of my blackness, a piece of my black womanness. I remember when I started writing, I looked around and there was very little. I loved poetry. And I loved it because I loved the sound, I loved the way poetry, some poetry made me feel. And if I couldn't find it, I wanted to create it myself. But for a long, long time, I would look around at what was called poetry in the academy and the books, and it didn't have anything to do with what I wanted from poetry. And in a sense, I was self-sustaining for a long time, or with other people who were my own age, who were also writing. And we had, I guess, the words been used so much, vision of what poetry could do, right? What writing could be. But it wasn't underlined by a lot of the stuff, certainly not by modern poetry, certainly not by a lot of the stuff we read in school. And I guess that taught me something that I try to remember and try to pass out again, which is poets, and I think by extension, all creative writers are visionaries. And being a visionary does not mean that we live in an ivory tower or that we're separate in some way. Poetry, writing, creativity is a way of life. It's a way of seeing the struggles you're involved in. It's a way of seeing the picket. It's a way, in other words, seeing experience. It is not by itself a particular experience. Do you know what I mean? What I'm saying is it doesn't separate us out from all of the other aspects of our living. That is very rewarding to me in one way. It's also something I have to constantly watch to make sure that I leave enough room to do the work I have to do in terms of producing my poetry, in terms of producing my writing. But not to believe that that is, and of itself, the definition of my work. So when I speak about my work, more and more for me, it becomes a whole. Whether I'm teaching, whether I'm raising my kids, whether I'm walking the streets, whether I'm giving rock, whether I'm writing poetry, it is all part of encouraging, nourishing my own survival and survival of the earth, really, of a future that I believe in. But coming back to the question of obstacles, okay, lack of space, and what I have here is, well, lack of space, paper. When I started writing prose, I realized one of the reasons why poetry, in addition to the fact that it is visionary, is so much an art of the people, an art of oppressed people, an art of women, an art of women of color. It is because you can write poems on a subway, right? You can write poems in transit. You can write poems on the backs of MacBooks if you have a poem. When you get into prose, I mean, already a ream of paper at cheapest cost $1.85, right? If you're going to revise a chapter, hey, you got to sit down with that typewriter, particularly if you type like 30 words a minute. So there's a whole different economic basis. Poetry has a kind of tightness and an economy that somehow makes it easier at the same time that it touches very essentially, I believe, a very deep place that our experiences lie. And I think that creativity, any creative material, in order to matter, in order to speak to you, in order to speak across our differences, not to pretend those differences don't exist, but to speak across them, in order for us to speak across the differences, it has got to be based in something that's authentic. It's got to be based in the center, in the middle. And we have all been raised to believe that that's a bullshit, right? That A, what's on the wall is important, what's in the store is important, what's in the book someone else wrote is important. What is inside of ourselves is totally irrelevant, except that is where the power lies. It's usually not pretty, but it is, you know, what we know very chaotically and from what we feel. We have been taught from the time we were little, the process of socialization and raising children is teaching us to understand. And we are taught to understand with tools that someone else gives us all the time. We're taught to understand so that we can function usefully in a setup that has basically very little to do with who we are. So we go back again to saying, well, like, what is it that I'm doing? What can I learn from that? How can I use it? And it is imprecise. It is chaotic. It is sometimes unpleasant, but it is very real. And I feel very, very powerful. And this, I feel, is what will, and I say, save us and make it possible for us to mix the differences into some useful kinds of knowledge, some useful kinds of information. anything I have to, the other thing that I think we fight, I know that I've fought as a black woman writer, is that persistent sense of worthlessness that I spoke about before. And it comes in a lot of different guises. Okay? We're taught the fact that this is, I'm wondering, what are you taking notes about? Because I'm
just making
it up as I go along.
Can you
read
that?
No. No. You want to know why I say that was, it's because, again, I have a kind of immediate bias against the frozen, the stuff that gets, you know, really sectioned onto the paper like it's the word of God, and it isn't. This is how it works for me, you know, is what it's saying. But that sense of worthlessness of anything that I say either has actually been said before and I just happen not to have read that particular book. I used to be constantly afraid I'd write a poem. I would love it. You know, if it really, and I think, oh my goodness, one of these days I'm going to open a book and someone will have written that poem already, right? So, but it's based in our thinking, hey, that nothing that we do is really worth it. You know? And I think, well, if someone hasn't already said it before, maybe it's not worth saying. So these are steps, and it doesn't even come in that framework. Very often we feel this and we're not even aware of it until we wonder, well, why am I keeping that in the drawer? Right? Or why am I not putting that down? And that's something else too that I used to do, which is carry stuff around in my head, really be afraid to commit it to the paper, to put it out there, right? This reality, that, I always tell you, this reality of the arm across the paper, translating all of the stuff in here that's boiling up, out through the arm, through the fingers and the pen, so that it makes the reality. It's very threatening, and the only way to overcome it is to do it. It's the concept, sometimes it's just to cover a paper with your name and keep writing it. And if you write your name, half a page of your name, you'll find something else. I have to say. But the practice of keeping a journal was so important for me because it helped me make that translation, right? Not even writing poetry all the time, but just writing things I felt, getting the stuff that I felt down so that it became a matter of course to translate feeling out through the arms and the fingers onto paper. It was just, when we carry all that stuff inside our heads, we live full lives. We move through so many different things, and it alters and it changes. Those alterations and changes are something you need to chronicle, right? You need to put down what goes on inside, so that otherwise we think that we're rewriting this poem or this story in our heads, and what we're doing is we're forgetting, we're editing it. So it's always better to edit it out on paper, even if you have 20 different versions of whatever you're writing. Put it down. Clear it out of your head and something else will come up. That's something I learned too.
All three of us, that we want to tell a little bit about how things that have kept us and continue to keep us from writing. So I'm going to try to put all of that together. I like what you said about as a kid being made to feel lit. You know, like that was an experience that I had. I came from a family of house servants, so there was a premium put on speaking properly and acting right, you know. But I grew up in the project where speaking properly and acting right would made you a target, you know, to get your ass kicked, right? So, you know, I started having that conflict at a very early age. It was one way that I had to talk at home, but then if I talked that way in the street, it was going to create a lot of problems for me, you know. So I had to learn at an early age, you know, how to deal with language on different levels, you know, speaking wise, right? So, and then when I think about, you know, my parents and probably other people's parents too, and why they put that kind of
pressure on us. You know, a lot of that has to do with race and it has to do with class. You know, it's like thinking, at least I know for black people, like in my family coming from the South to the North, thinking that things were going to be better for us here, and thinking that if we could just learn to talk right and act right, that the white people would treat us right and allow us to live and to be, you know, which, you know, like some of you might know, like Langston Hughes' line, "What happens to a dream deferred," right? Which I think my generation and the generation that are coming after me will are answering that question, you know. But it's obvious that the dream was deferred so that the class, the ways in which class influenced us to think bad about our language and our style and our music, you know, and our food and everything in this striving to prove that we could do, you know, what the oppressor was doing, that just causes a lot of confusion all around in life and in writing, because like before I said that I'm a new writer, which is partially true and partially confused, right? To me, I've just really begun to write for real in the last 3 or 4, maybe 5 years, where I was writing what I wanted to say in the way that I heard it, rather than doing journalistic writing or other kinds of writing where I had to write in somebody else's voice and their style, you know, which is standard English, but it's still not necessarily my voice. It's partially my voice, but it's not all of my voice. So, and like when I look at the things that I wrote, and then also I worked for a long time as an editor on popular magazines like Confessions magazines and Supermarket Women's magazines and stuff like that, right? So, and then that's, you know, like a whole other, you know, kind of trip. Then I also taught basic writing skills to black and largely black and Latin kids during the early middle 70s, right? So, and then again, you could see an example of that because here were kids who could just do all this verbal gymnastics when you talk to them, right? But then they couldn't write a standard English sentence, you know? So, and people were trying to say that they were illiterate, you know? So, but anyway, those are all, you know, ways in which I've seen class affect writing and language. Just in my lifetime. So, and in fact, it was during the time that I was teaching that I really began to be able to tune in more to my voice and stop trying to imitate this other voice. I'm not exactly sure for all the reasons why that happened, but that's the way that it happened. So when I look back over my life, I can see the ways in which race and class and of course sexism have affected me and given me, like Audrey was saying, a sense of worthlessness, a sense of like, you know, I don't really have anything original to say, or, you know, why should I bother, or if I say it, it's just going to, everybody's going to be upset with me and I'm going to have to fight everybody and, you know, like that. So, you know, it's like the kinds of pressures that I get within my community, which have to do with sexism and class, and then the kinds of pressures that I get from the standard English community, which have to do with race and sex and class. So, you know, we're catching it, you know, everywhere, because not only are we seen as weird within our community because we even write, but then when they see the things that we say, that, you know, that makes it a lot of trouble, you know? you know, I've never shown anything that I've written to anybody in my family. I mean, I just would never do it, you know. And they've never indicated any issue, you know, which, you know, gave me a clue, you know, right there. So I don't feel, you know, uptight about that. But I know, you know, like if they looked up and ever heard me on the radio or TV or something, they would be upset. And I'm sure that that's true for a lot of us, you know, that the things that we said are threatening and upsetting not only to the racist, patriarchal, sexist society, standard English group, but sometimes it's threatening to people that we love, you know? And that is something that blocks us, you know, like, I don't want my mother to see this, you know? So I won't say it, you know, or I don't want my lover to see this, or I don't want my boyfriend to see what I really think about sexism in this poem that I have here, you know, all of that. So it's an ongoing thing, you know, I mean, it's just because you